Today's daf in Masechet Ketuvot is daf Mem Zayin, and we're holding at the bottom of Mem Vav Amud Beit. And yesterday we just finished the raya from the pasuk that the father has the right to give over his daughter to kedushin, and not only that, he keeps the kedushin. Keeps the kesef kedushin. Now, of course, that was limited to the din of kedushin itself, because it was talking about the din of kesef kedushin. Because we brought a raya from ein kesef ladon zeh, v'yesh kesef ladon acher, umanu, the father. What about the other types of kedushin? Because the Mishnah says that the father is zeicha in his daughter, not only bekesef, but also b'shtar uviyah. How do we know that? Minolon. Omar Kro, since it says in the pasuk, "V'yatsa v'hayta le'ish acher, v'halcha v'hayta le'ish acher," from there we learn that v'hayta is a concept, which is a unified concept. Any type of havaya, whatever it is that the Gemara will be able to determine, is the way that the Torah views the nature of kedushin is the same. It's the concept of a havaya, not the modality of the havaya. And therefore, hukshu kol havayot lahadadi. Whatever is a suitable act of kedushin is considered to be one concept. If we could bring a raya that the father is zoicha midiraisa to the kedushin in terms of kesef, then that means by definition that he is zoicha to all of the various havayot together. Okay, then we said in the Mishnah, the father is also zoche to her mitziyot, which include, let's say, she wins the lottery, whatever. I mean, that also goes to the father. Now, that certainly is not a deraisa. Remember that deraisa, I mean, a woman is in no way financially an extension of her father, in this case, we're talking about the father. But the same thing of true when we moved on. We were talking about the husband, but the father, we weren't giving any zechus to the metziah, remember? For some reason, we're adding the addition over here that we have a zechus to the metziah of the by the father as well. And even though the Mishnah had made these distinctions, but for some reason, we are going to give a father these rights. And the question is, why, where do we get the idea of giving over a mitziah? Where would that come from? So the point is that he gets the mitziah bedavka mirabbanan. The reason that he gets that is because we want to encourage a father to maintain support for his daughter. Now, midiraisa, he's not mechuyev to give that support, but we want him to feel comfortable at supporting a child. If we are going to allow this girl, again, even though technically speaking, midiraisa, she has the rights to her own inheritance, to her own things that she finds in the street, to the lottery if she wins the lottery. But what might happen if she doesn't actually share things with her father, mishnei eva, her father might become very resentful. And because of that resentfulness, he might stop supporting her, because there is no chiyuv midiraisa to support her. This is how Rashi understands it. Tosis understands that it has to do with who he's going to accept as a marriage partner for her, and we want him to always look out for her best interests. But okay, but the pshat, according to most, is like Rashi, and we want to make certain that he's going to actually support her. We also know that when we're talking about the father is entitled to Maisa Yadea. So again, I mean, when it came to the husband, we spoke about that. We're going to get to it soon, where we have those takanas from. Turns out they're all part of the ksuva, but where exactly do we know that the father is zoche to the income of the daughter? Minola. The Omer of Una Omerav. Minayin Shema Asei Abat La'av. How do we know that a daughter's income goes to the father? Shenemar. So it's comparing bito to an ama. Ma ama ma'aseya de'al rabba, avbat ma'aseya de'al avia. Now this we're going to clarify soon. But what it's saying over here is that since the Torah compares bito la ama, and obviously by definition, the ama is dependent on whatever it is that the yodin tells her to do. That is not a violation of what she is, what he's not allowed to do to her. That, as the Torah said, you can't be a viperach, and so on and so forth. But that means that the father gets the same rights. So in the same way that the income, so to speak, that is to say the work that is going to be done, goes to the yodin, then the maisi yadea goes to the father. Now, in the end, the Gemara is going to say that this really doesn't make any sense. Why do I need la'ama? The very fact that the Torah gives the father the right to sell her means by definition that he owns what he's selling. How else can he sell her? So it must be that maisi yadea to her. We're going to see why it is that Ravuna Badavka looked to the hekesh over here of la'ama. And that is because if we take a look at the pasuk, just in terms of the right to sell her, he's only allowed to sell her when she's a ketana. Not so. The moment she has simanim, v'yatzachinam en kasa. So he loses any rights that he has to sell her. So that should be limited to the income of the ketana. V'ema hanimili ketana, gematz bezavin la. How do we know that where there is no schus for sale, such as a nara, where by definition, as the Gemara says, hashta yotze b'simanim, so once she becomes a gedola, a gedola means that the moment she becomes a nara, she doesn't become bogera to be called a gedola. Then once she becomes a nara, she's going to be yotze b'simanim. So kol shekein, he cannot sell her in the first place. Then what gives you the right to say that he is allowed to keep her income as a nara, maybe only as a ketana, of a nara, the lo metzi mezavin le. Indeed, the din would be that ma'aseh yadeh adita hava, she can keep her own income. Well, says the Gemara, I mean, it's mistavra de aviyahu. The meaning of the entire idea of the pasuk would be, if he is allowed to marry her off, consider the implications of marrying her off, because it's a big waste of time to get married, right? I mean, you got to go to a wedding, and the wedding takes hours, and you got all of this. I mean, it's like, if he doesn't have a right to be mevatel her from her work, because this is my money anyway, she can say, I can't go to no wedding, Daddy. I got no time. I have to work in those hours, you know? What are you taking me to the chuppah for? If the father was given the right to be able to marry her off, there's no practical way to marry her off, because any time that he schedules a wedding, she'll say, I have a meeting for that day. You know, I'm a very important cog over here in the office. So, sorry, Daddy, no wedding. So, there must mean that the Torah is giving him the rights to actually take her away from her work. Must be, therefore, that the work belongs to him. Baruch Avram is not smiling. And the whole idea over here is the joy of our learning together. What's going on? So, there we go. Okay. I mean, just because you're driving doesn't mean you can't smile. As a matter of fact, it's even a bigger reason to smile. You can look out the window and you can see Eretz Yisrael around you. And what could be better? Anyway, so that would mean that he's got to have the rights to her work, because anytime that he schedules a wedding, she'll say, I can't attend, sorry. You can marry me off, but I won't be there. How come about to let me say you down? It's like a brilliant, again, because you see, we have this prejudice, you know, that these inyanim that are given over to the father, you know, because father says, you got to get married, you got to get married. Not true. Because if he doesn't have rights to whatever that's going to cost, it's all very nice, it's a theoretical right, but she's not going to come. So how can he, in practical terms, how can he marry her off? I mean, maybe he can actually pay for whatever she loses. I said, listen here, you're coming to the wedding. Are you kidding? It's going to cost me $2,000 for the loss of work. I'll pay the $2,000. So maybe that's how the Torah gives the rights to the wedding, you know? Or maybe he'll schedule the wedding for late at night, you know? When anyway the office is closed, what's she going to say then, huh? She's going to say, I have a meeting at that time at 2:00 in the morning? That's not going to work. Or, better idea, schedule the wedding for Shabbos or for Yontif. Those explains even though Ein Ma'arvim Simcha B'Simcha, and therefore can't literally mean, okay, so it means right before Shabbos, right before Yontif, where anyway there's a Tosefet Shabbat, you're not allowed to work then. So you can say, okay, look, I know the office is closed on Erev Shabbos, you don't go to work, so don't give me this stuff. You're coming to the wedding. Okay, so this is not a good raya. All right, so how do we know in practical terms that the father has the right to an income of a nara? Because that's the whole point of the pasuk. Don't you understand? Well, Rav Huna brought the pasuk, Yimkor Ishet Bito Le'ama. So the idea of Le'ama as a hekesh, which is what Rav Huna said, just like the Ama has a work, is shayach to the Adon, so too the work is shayach to the father. Why do I need that? I can simply say, well, obviously, if the Torah allows him to sell her work, he must own her work. I mean, what do I need a hekesh to La'ama, right? That's ridiculous. That's the whole point, that the extra word La'ama is coming to be marba even the Nara. That's the point. So Ketana lo tzricha kra, I don't need the hekesh for Ketana, because obviously if Mizavin la, he's allowed to sell her work, he must own her work. So what do I need the pasuk for that says le'ama, le'na'ara? That's coming to add that even the na'ara, the work belongs to the father. Now there's some question about what this means, because there are many achronim that say that this means that if she's working, that he has a right to income, but it doesn't mean he can make her work. So in other words, even though we're comparing it to Le'ama, it doesn't mean that he has the reshus to actually compel her to work. But that's not so pasha. Actually, Rav Kanievsky paskin that he can force her to work. And there's indications in the Rishonim that you can force a daughter to work, but it's not clear whether it's referred to a katana or also even to a nara. Fine, but you know, it's certainly the pashtus is if we're making a hekesh, that the hekesh is a hekesh to the din. There's a whole discussion among some of the achronim about the nature of a hekesh of this kind, as to whether it's a purely halachic thing or gives you the same exact rights that you would have to the, as the odin has to the oma. Okay, but anyway, so keep that in mind in terms of the actual halacha. Let's move on to the next thing in the Mishnah. The next thing in the Mishnah was that the father is mekabel her get because he is still the boss of her kiddushin as long as she has not been nusua, tachas achupa. How do we know that? Well, the Torah compares gerushin to kiddushin. It says, this is the whole parsha of the taking a woman, kikach ishi shau, sne'ah, that whole parsha of not being able to change the bechorah. So it says over there, it's talking about v'yatza v'aitali ish acher, and then the question, is he allowed to remarry her, and lo yuchal, and if she was achrei ashur tamah, so all of those things. But you see from over here that there is a v'yatza v'aita, so that is itkush yitziya l'havaya. The dinim of a divorce are similar to the dinim of becoming married in the first place, which means that in the same way that the father is able to mekabel kedushin for the nara, he is also the yad to be mekabel her divorce. The next thing, which is the last of the list of what the father gets, is the transition to the difference between the father and the husband. So when it comes to a father, eino ochel perot b'chayeha. So what that means is that if she owns property, let's say that she inherited property, maybe she inherited property through her divorced mother from the father, and then her mother dies, and then she inherits the property. Obviously, the ex-husband doesn't inherit the property. So over there, the halacha is that he does not get the rights to the income of that property as long as she is alive and he hasn't inherited her. So Tana Rabbanan, ha'av eino ochel perot b'chayei bito. So the father doesn't get rights. Ah, so Gav is taking over. I see. Okay. Now we got Akiva, and they're also so Zoom put us next to each other. Look at that. Beautiful. Although I must say, Akiva's sitting over there in front of the nice warm fireplace, but I'll tell you, we wouldn't mind having a little bit of that in this hemisphere. So, okay, we'd have to become like birds, I guess. So the idea over here is that the Av, according to the Tanakhama, does not get those rights, whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, yes, he does. He gets the right to the Perot. So what is the Machlokas over here? So the Tanakhama says, look, as the Mishnah points out, a husband does get the right to the Perot of property. By the way, we shouldn't limit the case of the Perot of property just to a case of inheritance. In the case of the Perot would be any time that the woman brings in Nichsei Malug that are not, remember, Nichsei Malug is her own property into a marriage. Where over there, the husband gets the Perot of those Nichsei Malug, as opposed to a dowry, which would mean the Nichsei Tzon Barza, which has to be Sham, which we'll be discussing in a moment. But whatever it is, whether she inherited this property after they got married, there were Nichsei Malug that she brought into the marriage with her. The din is that a husband does get the right to keep the income from that property, but that's because the imkein mimna velo parik. The difference is, as we're going to see, the takana that a husband gets to keep income from property is based on a concern that he has to provide an insurance policy for her ransom. So if she's captured, he's going to have to ransom her. So because of that, the Rabbanan gave him an exchange for that insurance, which could be turn out to be extremely expensive. In other words, if she is going to be ransomed for a lot of money, if we wouldn't give him the peros, imkein mimna velo parik, the guy will say, well, I understand, I'm the guy that's going to have to pay her ransom. My rich wife who's got that field that's been an income for years that she hasn't shared with me, I don't know what she's got over there in that account of hers. Let her take care of her own ransom. Well, she's coming to me all of a sudden. Doesn't share any of it with me anyway. So therefore, in order to avoid that kind of situation, we give him the rights to the Perot. Because otherwise, it's just not going to happen. Even if we make it a Tanaya V'Ketuvah, we have to make it practical. Now, from the father's point, what are you going to say? That if we don't allow the father the income to property that she inherited, so he's not going to actually pipote his daughter from a kidnapper? He's going to let his dear daughter be dragged off by these kidnappers to be sold in the slave markets of Borneo? That's ridiculous. What father would do that? So, let's take advantage of his emotional attachment to his daughter. And anyway, he's going to go ahead and be part of her, whether we give him the rights to the Peros at all. That's the simple meaning of the Tanakhama's approach. Whereas Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, you know, this is a very romantic view of a father's concern for his daughter. Yes, there are fathers like that. But let's face fact. It can get to a point in which, since she's got a nice fat bank account, so Sava, the father, will also be mina veloporik. Sava, kisa nekitna yilava. This girl's got a nice big fat wallet all on her own. Tezova tifrok nafsha. Let her stop coming to me. Let her take care of herself. She goes gets herself kidnapped and then I gotta pay for it. Get out of here. So, okay. So this is just a question of whether we need to take into consideration even that type of relationship with her daughter. Okay. Doesn't seem to be a question that's based on any fundamental issue. We have to think about that. Anyway, now we know the dinim of the father, and we know the dinim that the Mishnah introduces that a husband has that go beyond the rights of the father. We like to understand where those come from. So understand the rights of the father. We learned all of those rights either from the Pasuk or from the Sfora of why it was that the Rabbonan were metaking those rights for him. The Mishnah goes on to say, but a husband gets more rights. So one of the things that is given to him, number one, is he does eat perot. Yater lav ha-baal, shuhu ochel perot b'chayeha, so that even if he doesn't inherit her, but he's got, because maybe he'll die first, but the point is that he does get the right to the perot. So here's an interesting question. We know that in the Ketuvah, we have the concept of the Tosefet of the Ketuvah, right? Now, the Tosefet of the Ketuvah is always written like this. Veda nedunya dan halalemi be'avia. These are the things that this woman has brought into this marriage from her father's household. And the Baal was tzavi leva hosif lo midile. The husband was merutze with this and added the following Tosefet HaKetuvah, right? You've all seen that in your own Ketuvah. That's the standard nusach of the Ketuvah, which means that these two dinim seem to be interrelated. In other words, she brings a nedunya into this, let's say, so she brings in some furniture or bedding or whatever it is that was brought into the marriage. Then the husband has also brought in this extra, these extra gifts and so on. So maybe she's brought in a golden watch. Who knows? I mean, whatever it is. Now, the question is, what happens if she dies before she ever gets to the ksuvah? And the father had promised such and such a dowry. Does he need to actually supply that dowry when it was written in a ksuvah? Or do we say, well, I mean, obviously he only was committed to giving that dowry on the das that there was going to be a wedding. I mean, if there ends up not being a wedding because she ups and dies, so then these Baal shouldn't have a right to it. So here's the question. Tanu Rabbanan, katav le'peirot, ksut ve'kelim, she'yavo imam bi'beit avia le'beit ba'ala. So let's say he does the normal thing, puts into the ketuvah that she is going to be bringing into this marriage X. And then she dies. Meta, before she gets to the chuppah. The din is, according to the Tanakama, lo zachah ha-ba'al bedvarim halalo, the Baal does not get the rights to those things. Whereas Rabbi Natanam, Mishum Rabbi Natanam, lo zachah ha-ba'al bedvarim halalo, and he does get the rights. So what's the basis of this argument? Shall we say that maybe this argument is an expression of the machlokas between Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and the Rabbanan, which we're going to have a little bit later, which talks about the Tosefet of the Ketuvah. Now, as I pointed out, the Tosefet of the Ketuvah, which is always introduced with the words that Vitzovila Vahosifla Midile, X amount. And that Tzovila always is a continuation of the clause that begins of Don Dunya Dan Halat Lemi Beit Avua, right? Or Bibe Nash if she doesn't have a father. So the question is, we're taking for granted right now that those two things would actually be exactly the same. And we do know that there is a major machlokas about the opposite case. This case was the case that the father had promised things and the daughter dies. But what about in the opposite case, where the woman ends up never being married in the sense of having gotten to the chuppah? So here it says, we're going to see later on, this is Mishnah later on, nitar malau nitgarsha, it doesn't matter whether it was from the erusin and she never made it to the chuppah with him because he dropped dead, or it was from the nisuim, and it doesn't matter whether he dies or whether he divorced her before they ever got to the chuppah. The point is that she collects the entire ketuvah, including the Tosefet, Govat HaKol. Whereas Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, no, wait a minute. I mean, why would she be Govat HaKol? I mean, he obviously, when he said Vitzavila, he wants to add to her. He doesn't want to add to her if they're never going to get married. So, therefore, it's true that once she was already married and went to the chuppah, so then, of course, by definition, that's when the entire ketuvah is due. And if he divorces her or he dies, I don't care if it's the next day. But the point is, he already wrote that ketuvah went into effect, and that's the way it is. So mina nisuin, yes, she's govat hakol. But mina erusin, she only gets her fundamental ketuvah, which is the 200 zuz for the betulah, the 100 zuz for the almana, and that's it. Because all the other stuff that he wrote to her, I mean, it was obviously with the intention of ending up under the chuppah with her. So if that never happens, so then he never gave it. Okay, now, isn't that the same thing? So as we're saying, the father wanted to bring all this into the wedding, And Rabbi Nosson says, well, yes, he does, but not at the Erisin. His intent is that it should be part of their life together after the chuppah. He didn't mean to give it to this guy if she's going to end up never making it and she dies before she ever gets there. Same machlokas. Perfect, right? So apparently this machlokas, Rabbi Nosson and Tana Kama, is exactly the same. Liman di Omar lo zachah. So it's according to the Tana Kama, that's going like Rabbi Loza ben Azariah, who says in the mirror case, right, that where the chosen dies during the erisin, so then this would be exactly the same, even though there was all of this tosefet, but he never meant to give that tosefet if he's going to die before they even get married. Whereas the man di Omar, Rabbi Nosson says that he does get it, he must hold, like the Chachamim here in the Mishnah, who argue with Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and they say that even where the chassan dies before they ever get to the chuppah, the halacha would still be that everything, including the Tosefet, would go, so it makes sense. It's sort of in the mirror image, right? Says Gemara, no, not right. It is not a mirror image. Even though Lamais, it's written together in the Ketuvah, it is not meant as a mirror image. It's what we need to analyze is the psychological milieu of the gift. Remember, what we're talking about over here is essentially an Anant Sahade type of situation. What was meant by this gift? Whenever we're talking about Anant Sahade, then the particulars of the psychology are fundamental to the halacha. It's not because, well, it's linked. I mean, they put it together, but that does not necessarily follow. It's very possible that everybody might agree, including Rabbi Nosson, Tana Kama, they both sound like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, that if the husband dies, that then the kala only gets the mana or mataim. But in the mirror case, where it was talking about that the girl died before they ever got to the chuppah, which you're saying, well, it's basically the same thing. No, it's not basically the same thing. Look, I mean, obviously, the one who says that the chosen does not have a right to claim all of these things that the father promised. Okay, fine. That follows from Elazar ben Azariah. But even the man d'Omer who says that he was zocha, he can still claim that that's true even according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Because he can say, look, atkan lokom Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah olmedi de ledida. The idea of the Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, the Tosefet, obviously the Baal wanted to give all of this because they would be building a life together. If they end up never building that life together, never getting to the chuppah, so then he had no intention of giving it. Shaloka tavla el amanat lakonsa, like we said. I mean, it's clearly that was his intent, but that is not the same intent as a father's gift to the chosen. Medido lididei, remember, it's not her, it's the father. It says beferish, an alat lemi beavua. These are the gifts that the father wanted to give. That is a totally different psychology. You're turning it into a business, essentially. But it isn't a business. It's not necessarily that the father is giving all of this because they're going to be founding their lives on the golden watch or whatever that he's putting into the house. That's not the point. He is interested in this event. I feel Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is moda. Dibishum ichatunehu. He's very excited and happy about the fact that there are currently relations with a whole new family, and it's become, they had this tnoyim together and so on. Obviously, I mean, he's hoping that it'll work out, and so, but it's always like that. You're hoping it'll work out. But right now, there is a sense of satisfaction in the father, which is very different than the girl who's starting off her life and is hoping for all of these things, and the boy who's hoping for all of these things. That's between them. And that's true that it was only in order that there should be a life. But the father is happy with these events of the chitun. These are my menu mechutanim, and he's introducing them. But what new mechutanim? You know that there's even going to be a marriage. Nobody knows anything, but I'm very happy with my new mechutanim. So fine. So because of that, that according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, may well be, and therefore Rabbi Nosson says, is not conditioned upon there being a marriage. It's simply an expression of the way the father feels now. Now, the next thing that we said is that once she's married, so then her husband is mechuyev in mizonot. Now, her father's not mechuyev in mizonot, and we're trying to encourage his mizonot, as we said before, and that's why we want to make sure there's no eiva between them, because all we need is for him to start feeling resentment, and then he'll figure, why should I have to support them? So turn around, you know, you see this all the time, right? Especially, I mean, in contemporary society, you know, let her take care of herself. And it's like, you know, the whole life, they're a bunch of spoiled brats that are coming to me. Now they're coming to me because they need this, they need that. She wants a new car and she wants to get married. Let her go out and work for it. So turn around on it. When it comes to a marriage, tiknu mizonotea tachat ma'ase yadea. Now look, this is backwards. And lemaisa, it turns out in the end, that the Gemara actually changes this. And we're going to see later on that Rav Huna says it's actually the opposite. They were tiknu ma'aseh yadea tachat mizonotea, not mizonotea tachat ma'aseh yadea. So the point over here is that the husband is, it's a given. He's got to provide for his wife. That's a diraisa, sheirak, sutava, onata, Lo yigara, that we have to see, as we're going to very shortly, that includes her support. So when it says over here that the Rabbanan were mitakein, the Maisei Adayim, what it means is that since he is supporting her, we want to actually give him the rights to her income so that he feels that this is appropriate. She's putting in her piece to the marriage, and he's putting in his piece. Now, remember that, as we'll see later on, Yicholah Isha Lomar, Eini Nizonet Ve'eini Osa. She can say to her husband, okay, this clause of the Ketuvah is meant for whose benefit? My benefit. Not the way it's written here, Tiknu Mizonotea Tachan Ma'asei Yadea, but vice versa. That my income is given to him in order to ensure that he's going to feel good taking care of me, right? I don't want him to take care of me. This schmo hasn't held down a job in years. I've got a great job. Let him figure out how he's going to eat. I'm keeping my own income. Now, she could certainly say that. We're not going to force her to accept the tnaei ha'ketuvah that are there for her benefit and say, we know better what's for your benefit than you know. That's ridiculous. If this is what she wants, then this is what she wants. And therefore, it's important for us to understand, as we're going to see, what element of the ketuvah, what tenai of the ketuvah is meant to ensure what element of what it is that we're taking for the husband. Okay, so the mizonot, that was for the Maisei Adayim, we should say, that was for the fact that he's going to be providing mizonot. Now, the chiev that he has to bury her if she dies, that is the juxtaposition to the chiev of the ketuvah, meaning that whatever it is that she brought into the marriage, he's mechuyev to give her back. The nechsei melut belongs to her. Now, if she dies, that takes off that obligation, right? So now maybe there was, I don't know, $200,000 worth of stuff that he owes her and that he's going to have to give back to her heirs as opposed to his heirs. And now he doesn't. Now he gets to keep it. Well, in exchange for that, he should at least bury her, don't you think? So that was the chiev of the kfura. That comes in place of what doesn't mean the ksuva matayim, monon matayim. It means in exchange for the ksuva, meaning the things that had been brought into the ksuva that now he doesn't have to return anymore. And therefore, the husband eats the peres of her property. Huh? What are you talking about? Peros? Who's talking about peros? How did we get it? Listen, we were talking about the din of what it is that he has to do in terms of kfura, and now we're talking about peros? Did I miss something over here? Yep, says the Gemara, you sure did. We sort of shorthanded this. There's a piece missing here. Chesuri mechas. So what it should have said is, tiknu mizonotea tachat ma'aseh yadea, kfurata tachat ktuva. And because of that, lefichach baal ochel perot. But I'm still, okay, fine. Now you're telling me it was in the brisa. Thank you. It was in the brisa. It still doesn't make any sense. What do you mean, Lufika? Because of what? If you said Peirot Beferish, Pirkunat Tachat Peirot, now you're saying, you're changing it, that actually there's this new thing over here, which you didn't mention before, namely that we are going to insist that he has to pay her ransom, which is another one of the Tanaya Ketuvah. And because of that, he gets the right to the Peirot. Is that what you said, or did I miss that too? Well, if that's what you said, what do you mean, Lefichach Balokel Peirot? That's exactly what you just said. That's nuts. What are you explaining? You added another thing. So now I know what everything is for, right? Mizonot is for Maisiyadea, and Kvura is Tachat Ketuva, and we missed out on that part that he also provides insurance for kidnapping, and because of that, he eats the Peirot. But why do you add in the words, therefore he eats the Peirot? That's what you just said. So my Lefichach. Because, I'll tell you, there's two issues over here. When we give him the right to the Peirot, does that mean that he eats the Peirot, or does it mean that he can have a bank account of all of the income, which serves as an emergency cash reserve in the event that the family runs into trouble? I mean, those are two different things. What we're saying over here is that since we're giving him the rights to the Peirot, he actually eats the Peirot, and he does not have to keep it in a special trust account for the family's future. That's what we're saying. Because, and I'll tell you why. Because Ma'adetema, look, I would have thought without those extra words, Lefichach Ba'al Ochel Peirot, I would have thought that doesn't follow. Because maybe Meichel Lo Achlina, maybe he shouldn't be allowed to eat them as they come in. He can't take the income of her property and make it part of the monthly in support of the family. He has to put it into an account. Why? Because otherwise it won't be available. He has responsibility to support the family, right? So he could never just eat it directly. We don't do that. Why don't we do that? For a very cute reason. Because, you see, if we say he gets to take any of the income from her property, so then he doesn't really know how much that income was, right? So it's 5 years later. He knows he has a general right to her income, and now he gets this bill from these kidnappers, leave $500,000 at the edge of the river and make sure there are no cops around. Okay, so now $500,000, oh my God, that's a lot of money. But I have been eating her Peirot, right? Now, suppose there were a bank account with the Peirot. Well, let me see what's in the bank account. $50,000. The heck with it. I don't have enough to pay her. I'll offer them $50,000 or they can take her and sell her in Borneo. Right? So therefore, we're worried that if he knows precisely what the bank account is, he's not going to provide insurance. He's just going to use the bank account. We want insurance. That's the point, which, of course, is the whole psychology of insurance. I'll pay only $100 a month, you know, maybe for 80 years, and then they will give me a crummy $50,000 to my family when I die after they've eaten $500,000. It's the same idea. So therefore, we want him to feel that he's got who knows how much income coming in. And because of that, whatever it is that she is going to have to pay to the kidnappers, he'll pay. But if we do it the other way, imke mimne velo parik, kamash ma'an. So you might have thought that if we don't allow him to eat it, he won't pay. Kamashman, the exact opposite is true. Because the Ha'adifa, this is even better to get him to pay. Because Zimnin de lo malo, maybe the bank account won't be full. It's only 5 years later. There isn't enough to cover her kidnapping. So Zimnin de lo malo parik le midide. This way, even if there wouldn't be the amount there, he still is going to provide that insurance and pay her out of his own resources. So, okay, you're taking all this for granted, and it makes a very big difference, mind you, because in saying that A is connected X, and B is connected Y, and C is connected Z, so what you've done in making them interdependent is you have allowed, since you said, let's say, the mizonos are connected to my siyadai, right? Okay, so then that means that the woman can say, well, I don't want mizonos, and therefore I'm not giving my seed a dime. But how do you know that that is the correct way to set up the juxtaposition of the chiyuvim versus the zechuyos? Maybe, I don't know, maybe the Maisi Adayim was connected the insurance policy for the Piruk, in which case it wouldn't help her to say, well, I don't want his support, I'm not giving him my work. Maybe the work has nothing to do with his support. So where did you get the idea that this is the correct juxtaposition? By the way, Tosis points out that even though we certainly can't tell her when she is saying that this guy doesn't bring in any money, I'm the one who's making all of the money, that she can say. She cannot say, I want the income from my property and the heck with your insurance policy. Because there, it's not true. We can force a person to take an insurance policy because people do not have a willingness to plan for the future. And that's something that we need to be mitaken. And that's the reason, by the way, that this is true even legally in terms of working for a company, right? You're working for a company, they are mechuyev to pay into a pension fund. You can't turn around and say, I don't want a pension fund. I'm not interested in the future. I want to eat now. You can't say that. But that's exactly the same thing over here. It is possible for us to say we know better than you. Why? Because in the end, the government's going to have to take care of you. Somebody's going to have to take care of you. And therefore, society could be mechayev that you can't just go throw yourself on the public. And therefore, we are mechayev you to make sure that you have a pension plan. Same thing is true over here. All right. So, but this part in which we're taking for granted that the income that he has a right to is because of the mizonot and so on. The perot tachat pirkuna. How do we know that? Maybe the epochana. Maybe it's the other way around, right? I mean, maybe we gave her the income in exchange for the perot of the property, you know? Maybe we gave her the insurance policy in exchange for the monthly income. Omer Abaye, look, it's all a function of what is standard. What is most standard? Now, most standard is that there's support. That's a given. People need to be supported. It's almost inevitable that there's going to be some income. Every woman does something or other. So she runs a gun, she fixes sheitlach, she works in an office, or she serves as Biden's top advisor, whatever it is. But she's making some, these are all real examples. Right? So she's making money. And that's standard, that there's an income. And therefore, the standard need is connected to the standard event. I mean, as far as getting kidnapped by, you know, these communist motorcycle riders, whatever, you know, I mean, how often does that happen, you know? So we're not going to be misaken something that is standard for something that isn't standard. On the other hand, how often does a woman have a bunch of property that is generating income and so on? So again, so one thing, it makes more sense that we made these takanas in that order. That's all. Well, my Rava, let me quote to you, Brayta, where you will see that the halacha, and the way that it seems like you said it over here, was a little confusing that we it's like we are going to make him give her support in exchange for the Maisi Adayim, when really it's the other way around. And the Brayta says, I'm going to show you, is that it's a D'oraisa, the Tanya. She'irak, sutav, onata. It says beferish, he cannot be migareya, three things. She'er, ksut, va'ona. Now, what exactly are those three things? So, she'era, elu mizonot. V'cheinu omer, v'asher achlu she'er ami. Now, remember that this is also all part of the psukim that gave rights to the father. He sells his daughter as an oma. And now he decides that he's going to take her in exchange for that money that was paid for as an amah, that's called yi'ud. And now the Torah says, but she has to be treated, even if there's an additional wife that you're taking and so on. She'erav uksutav onatah lo igara. That means that, again, the entire idea of the protection of women is all within the context of these inyanim, which is remarkable. Starts off with rights of a father. That's the underlying meaning of the Benurei Beit Aviyah, even if we come out that Benurei Beit Aviyah is essentially referring to Nedarim. But there's Ramazim here to the essence of what it is in a relationship. So what do those three things mean? Okay, he says the Braita. Well, see, not everybody agrees to this, but this Rava says this is exactly where we see that this Tana holds that it's a D'oraisa, because She'era refers to money, support. How do we know it refers to Mizonot? Because when the Navi is putting down in a horrible way that the Dayane Yisrael and the Malcha Yisrael, they embezzled funds from Klal Yisrael. So he says it very powerfully in Micha. He says that the Malachim went ahead and they ate She'er Ami. They ate up the food that was meant for my people and let them starve so they could have their parties. Kisuta, okay, well, we know what kisuta means, covering, which is clothing. And onata means the ona ha'amura b'torah. Ona is the time, the set times at which a husband is mechuyev to give attention to his wife, depending on the circumstances, obviously depending on how busy he is, how far away from the home he is, and so on and so forth. So therefore, each one of these, how do I know that ona means this? V'cheinu omer im ta'ane et binotai, and that is if you, this is how Rashi learns in some places, that im ta'anot, please, Rabosab, not seeing anybody, so I'm starting to lose my kesher here. I don't know whether I'm talking to names on a screen or whether I'm talking to human beings, you know, goodniks. So note that the word ona has a double meaning. It's really strange, because when Lavan says im ta'aneh benotai, he is talking about torturing my children. That's the simple meaning of it. Why do I say that? Because when it comes to Yom HaKippurim, in which you are mechuyev to be ma'aneh yourselves, it includes not having sexual relations. How do we know that that is considered to be inui? Because it says im ta'aneh benotai. So not enjoying sex is an inui. So therefore, it's really a weird coincidence. The word ona means the correct times, but it also means the thing which, if it's missing in its ona, is an inui. Now, which one is it? So Rashi learns that ona that is referred to is the ona, the ta'anet benotai, from that which is due to her at that time. It's a lashon of ona. Masha'en Ken Tosa says, you see clearly from the Gemara in Yuma that it means the tsar, that you would, the torture that you inflict on her if you're not going to give her attention. So, isn't that amazing? That the word ona and ona means the same thing. And it's like, wow. Okay, so that's referring to the nature of the relations with her. Rabbi Elazar Omer? No. She'era, remember, always means shared intimacy. It means flesh. We see that. Ishi shoko she'er besoro lo tikruvu legalot erva. So that's the part that is sexual, not the ona. We refer to sex as ona. Kisuta, yes. Kisuta certainly means kipshuto. There's no other way to understand clothing. And onata, we know, means mizonot, because we just had that in the Parshas HaShavua. Vaya'ancha, vaya'arivecha. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you the man asher lo yadu avotecha, because that way, when you don't have that man, and you don't have what to eat at that moment, and you're nervous, then you feel the pain of hunger, right? So that's the vaya'ancha, vaya'arivecha. So on the contrary, ra'av, hunger, is related to ona, in the sense of tsar, and the she'era is related to intimacy. And Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says, these things are meant to be contextually related. Only one word here makes sense. What's that word? Ksut. We know what ksut is. Everything else is very vague. And therefore, the Torah is putting together she'era kisuta. That means define the kisut according to the she'er. Meaning, okay, let's look at her body. What type of clothing does she need? So you're going to say, okay, so here's this old lady that I'm married to, you know. So she's 80 years old. I don't have any clothing to give her, but my great-granddaughter has some good clothing that she's not wearing anymore. Let's give her that nice teenager's dress. And she says, I ain't going out with this teenager's dress. So that's what it means, according to her, and vice versa. Well, I just got some great clothing from my great-grandmother. I really can't afford to buy you any new clothing, but this is terrific clothing. I'm not putting on that old woman's clothing, says his 18-year-old wife. Okay, so that means the fum sheira tink suta. It's not a matter of covering her. That's not the point. It's a matter of appropriately covering her, according to Sheira. That should be the ksutash. Now take a look at the next word. Kisut and ona relate also. The ona is the season. So you'll say, okay, I got some great clothing for you. It's a little old, so, you know, it's not very warm in the winter. Or, I just got some great clothing for you, which is very appropriate to your age. It's from my great-grandmother, and you're also a great-grandmother now, you know. So that would be fine, right? She never wore it. Now it's the middle of the summer, and this is like a nice woolen, beautiful suit. Yeah, put on the woolen suit. A brand new, thick, oh God, I can't wear this. So the same idea. Lefum onata tenksuta. Don't give her new thick clothing in the middle of the summer, and don't give her shechakim in the middle of the winter. That's the point. Tani Rav Yosef, she'era means flesh, remember. That's different than intimacy, because it adds an additional dimension. So you'll say, okay, so intimacy means sex. No, intimacy means intimacy. It means being with each other, enjoying each other's bodies. That's what it means. And therefore, lo yinag b'minag parsim, we're going to act like these ridiculous Persians, where they're mishamshim mitotehem belavushehem. They keep their clothes on when they're having sex? No way. She can insist on a divorce if you want to do that. The Om Ravuna. A guy who says, Omer, efshi elani bevigdi vihi bevigda. I got some hang-ups over here, you know, or I'm very tsanua. I don't like this business of sitting around naked with some girl. That's disgusting. So I'll do my job, but that's about it. The halacha is yotzi v'noten k'tuva. This guy's his problem. He's got to pay her if he divorces her under these conditions. Okay, so this adds some wonderful new chiyuvim. We have a deeper understanding now of the interrelationship. We see furthermore another layer of protection, which we didn't think of until now, which is the Sheirak Sutava Onata in all of its glorious detail of what it is that needs to be taken into consideration. Physical needs, financial needs, needs of intimacy. All of these things are part of the Torah's Shkida on the attention to a woman and to make sure that she's not taken advantage of. The whole Masechet is so beautifully interwoven when we see the way that it develops from the beginning in the transition from the Nureya Beit Avia through the Erisin and the shared responsibility into now at last at this Mishnah into the Rishus of the Baal and the Chiyuvim that the Baal has. Poetry, gentlemen, poetry.